From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's the weekly program on topics of health, fitness, nutrition, and lifestyle in general. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Tim Henney. Today in the program, we speak with Barbara Oakley, PhD. She's an engineer whose work involves bioengineering with a focus on the complex relationship between neuroscience and social behavior. She teaches the world's most popular online course called Learning How to Learn. And today she'll talk to us about breaking through obstacles to learning and discovering our hidden potential.
I can't wait to find out what your hidden potential might be.
What if? What if there is no hidden?
Yeah. No, that's not possible.
I just have to follow that line of, you know, what if?
What if? I know. I mean,
of course we all have hidden potential, but what if?
Of course we do. Well, every so often, don't you find yourself trying something new and you find that either you have a bit of an affinity for it, maybe you're not an expert at it, but or you find that, wow, this is something I've never done before that I really like doing. And this is the sort of thing that she'll talk to us about, you know, how to find those things and then how to expand them.
Maybe even just recognize them.
Right. Yeah. Give yourself a break. Give yourself a little credit for what you might be good at.
Oh, thanks, Lynn. I'll
do
that.
5 years ago, you didn't know you would be a great radio host.
That I was curious.
And that you were curious. That's right. So that'll be a great conversation. And then speaking of hidden potential or perhaps developing potential, we'll speak with two local adventure guides, Tina Nardi and Alicia Nicewander, who are putting together a camp for girls ages 14 to 17. It's called the Empowerment Camp. And it's coming up in June. And those gals always have lots to talk about within the whole realm of adventure and how to find it.
And finally, we'll have a brief overview of this Saturday's March for Science, like we haven't overviewed that a few times this week and last week. So once again, we'll be talking about the March for Science taking place along Park City's Main Street. And in the past, we've had some big First Amendment marches. It was the Women's March, and we had quite a turnout, so I'm not sure where the count stands for this one, but we're certainly preparing for it along the same lines, I believe, to minimize impacts. And of course, coming at a different time of the year, hopefully it'll not be as impactful for our community, but a great First Amendment event.
About a tenth of the number of people expected on Main Street Saturday.
It'll be and a good test to see how we handle that.
Yeah, exactly. And there won't be 4 feet of snow, and it won't be during the Sundance Film Festival. So impacts will be very different.
No snow, no celebrities, yeah. And one-tenth the
people. Well, there will be some celebrities, some celebrity scientists coming to town.
Do they qualify?
They may not qualify.
Is Bill Nye the science guy going to be here?
Okay. Yeah. We'll talk about that at the end of the hour. This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words.
Hi, this is Whitney Wall from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain's annual summer concerts return to Canyons Village on June 24th and continues throughout the summer on select Saturdays. Live music begins at 6 o'clock and is open to all ages. More information at parkcitymountain.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Well, people have unexpected career and life twists all the time, at all ages. Don't think of yourself as being alone if you find yourself in search of a new path, a new career. It feels risky, you know, to start anew. And how do we? Bioengineer, neuroscientist, and best-selling author, Dr. Barbara Oakley is our guest. In her new book, Mind Shift, she discusses how to find your hidden potential, how to retrain and reinvent yourself, and to uncover talents that we didn't know we had. Dr. Oakley shows us how we can turn perceived weaknesses as well into strengths. Dr. Barbara Oakley, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Well, thank you so much, Lynn. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you are quite prolific in your pursuit of things along this line. And I think it must come from your interest and your research and your expertise in neuroscience.
Well, in part, and it's also in part inspired by the fact that it's kind of a surprise, but I early in my life, I flunked my way through elementary, middle, and high school math and science. I absolutely hated them, thought I couldn't do them, and so I enlisted in the Army to learn a new language. And when I reached age 26 and I was getting out of the military, I suddenly realized that, hey, guess what? I don't really have a good marketable skill, and because I learned Russian, and there wasn't a lot of call for people whose only professional ability was that of speaking Russian. And so I decided to try to retrain my brain to see if I could learn math and science, and started at remedial high school algebra at 26, and lo and behold, here I am, a professor of engineering. So it worked, and actually, in writing the book Mindshift, I traveled around the world and met people who had made marvelous changes that even they never thought they could make. And I think it's an inspiration for all of us to learn about what science has to say and what people have done as far as growing and changing their careers and their lifestyles.
Yeah, that's such an inspirational story, your story. And I wonder, you know, first of all, I think when we say we flunked out of elementary, junior, high school, whatever it is, I always go back and wonder why that happened. Was it as much as one bad teacher or one bad class that we just didn't get, and then we believed it about ourselves that we were bad at that subject? What was it for you?
Well, I think having a teacher who doesn't click for you is a very common thing. For me, it was that my father was in the military, and so we moved all the time. And when I was 7 years old, we moved from Texas to Massachusetts, and suddenly they were way far ahead of me in the multiplication tables. Oh. And it wasn't like I was some genius where, boom, I just was able to catch up. I mean, it just didn't really make sense to me and didn't really click. And so I just kind of realized from then on that I couldn't do math and science. It wasn't my thing. And, of course, I was wrong. But there's so many different ways to fall off of any learning path, but particularly math and science, because math especially is very sequential. So you fall off anywhere along the way, it's hard to get back on.
And Barbara, I'm wondering about what motivated you, and maybe what you found that motivated the other people that you ran across in your exploration, your research for the book, because it sounds to me as though you said, I'm going to see if I can, which is kind of a competitive thing. I'm just going to go see. I've told this story about myself. I've bought into it. I've embraced it that I can't. So I'm going to see if I can break that mold and break that story and see if I actually can. Or were you doing something like following curiosity, which we've heard is a major theme in many of our interviews on this show, where if you follow your curiosity, it'll lead you to your passion. And when you become passionate about something, you'll find that you can transform your life through connecting with that passion. And those are kind of different. And I'm wondering if there was a common component or if it's a little different for everybody who transforms.
I think it is different for everyone. This is a really good question because I think it gets to the heart of what motivates people. And for me, and for a fair number of people, it's often a contrasting view of where you are now with where you would like to be. And where I was getting out of the Army. And the Army had put me into a highly technologically oriented position. I was made a signal officer. I was supposed to be commanding troops who were installing advanced switching systems, telephone systems, and so forth. And I tell you, I didn't even know what a volt was. So I was just really in over my head. But at the same time, I could look around me and see that the West Point engineers that I was working with really, they were good problem solvers, and they also could call their own career shots a lot better than I could. I was kind of, you know, I didn't have a lot of flexibility because I'd put all my eggs in one professional basket as far as training only in Russian. And so I was contrasting where I was in the military, which I was kind of trapped in a job that I didn't like, didn't know very much about, and couldn't, like, boss myself around. I always had to kind of do what I was told in the military. Not that they were bad. I think the military was great for me, but I wanted to have a little bit more say-so in my career, and I began contrasting, wait a minute, the other people seem to have more flexibility in their career. I want that too. Yeah, I want that ability. And so it was the contrast with where I was, with where I wanted to be, and it's not the only way to do that by far, is to go the technological, getting an engineering degree route, which I had, which I went. But that was something that I saw as a possible career path that was also a kind of a personal challenge, just because I always took pride in being open to learning new things. And then I realized that suddenly, wait a minute, I'm actually not that way at all. And so those two things, I think, were big motivators for me.
You know, I'm curious about that, that statement you made about what motivated you and you think motivates people to change from where they are to where they'd like to be. And I mean, it raises in my mind the question of who the audience is for your book, because obviously there's an audience of people who are in a place that they, compared to where they would like to be, is not where they are. So that's the obvious answer. But what about a little bit deeper than that? And you look at, you know, on a global scale, there are a lot of people who really can't make a decision about where they are. They're stuck in a place. So it obviously your book is targeting a group of people who have the fortune of being able to make a choice about transforming their life versus being stuck in a life that they have no control over.
That's right. And you're, again, getting at another very perceptive point. And I wanted to, in the book, address these very ideas of what cultures allow you to move more. And in some sense, we're in North America and Europe and in some countries worldwide, it's always somewhat difficult to transition in your career. But in some places, it's more difficult than others. And so what I did was travel around the world and meet learners who were changing in many different countries, from Central America to Singapore to the European Union, and talk about some of the different issues they face. And sometimes you can make a major career leap, you know, but in some cultures and societies, just making a more modest leap is difficult enough. But I think in all of these circumstances, it's often worth pondering, what are the possibilities, and what do I have sort of, you know, within my control? And sometimes it's more than you think, especially in that we have these aptitude tests that tell you what you're good at, and people put themselves in a slot of what they think they're good at. And that slot isn't necessarily true. It's only a snapshot of what you are now. And here's the great thing, is there's, even in the last 5 years, the possibilities of changing yourself by taking online coursework, online classes, in whatever you want to change into, they're just unbelievable. I mean, you can make changes no matter where you are in the world that you never could before using these online resources.
Mm. As I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about the last time that I took an aptitude test, and I'm wondering if our listeners are thinking the same thing. Gee, it was when I was 17 years old, and I did the ACT. And I'm wondering about, you know, the where we find aptitude tests. Direct us towards the place to go if we say, you know, I want to know if I'm really possibly good at math and science when I never thought I was before.
Well, actually, I don't even look at those kinds of websites just because I tend to be thinking that they unnecessarily slot us in. If I had taken aptitude tests, which I did when I was 17 and 20 years old, they said, no way can she ever do anything technological. You know, she can't be an engineer. And so they can be so completely misleading because they just tell you what you're, you know, what you're kind of good at now without telling you what you can be good at if you put some attention to it.
Yeah. Well, do we just have to be creative about when we see ourselves with an affinity or an interest at, you know, towards something or a curiosity? And I'm thinking of, I work in communications, but the other day I was taught how to use a GIS program and work with manipulating a map. And I thought it was so much fun. And I said to the GIS professional that perhaps I'm now a GIS professional. And he laughed and told me I couldn't be that until I got certified. But, you know, I thought that was really fun. Maybe I'll take a GIS class. And is that how we have to look at things?
That's actually a really good way to look at things, is to kind of stumble a little bit across something that sparks your interest. You can also tackle it a little more strategically if you want. In Singapore, there's this idea of something called second skilling, and that is that you don't just develop your main expertise, you know, whether it's journalism or being an engineer, or instead you work to develop sort of two areas of expertise. So the second area can be either something that complements what you do in your regular job or something that kind of just sparks your interest, you know, like the map program or like photography. So second skilling is a really good approach to being resilient in your career, because you just don't know what changes are going to be coming along, what with the advances in artificial intelligence and changes in technology. But if you're learning something, anything, it helps keep you mentally flexible and nimble and kind of in the mode of learning, so you can more easily tackle whatever might be thrown at you. But also, you'll be surprised at when you learn something completely different, how often that might come in handy in what you're doing, because you can bring creative ideas sort of through metaphor. Like, let's say that you're an engineer, and so for your side hobby, you're reading about horse racing in the 1930s or something. Well, ideas will occur to you because of what you've been learning about that will give you sort of some creative ideas on what you're working on in your regular job. So there's all sorts of pluses to sort of learning new things on the side.
And Barbara, is there a toolkit of, you know, practices that people can use in order to, as you say on the title of your book, break through obstacles to learning? So what can you do to remove the obstacles to learning? And I know you do an online course, Learning How to Learn, and I know that relates to your book, Mind Shift. So could you tie those together for us?
Yes. So actually, Learning How to Learn, the course, is through University of California, San Diego, and it is the world's largest massive open online course. We have almost 2 million students in it. And what that does is introduces people to just really practical insights on how they can learn more effectively. Now, the thing is, though, how do you apply that when it comes to learning in your job and kind of overcoming the obstacles that you set for yourself in what you think you're capable of learning? And that's where the book Mind Shift comes in, is it has interesting stories of different people who've accomplished very often intriguing changes in their careers that, and I try to select changes that aren't like really one-off. You know, so you go, that's great for them, but I could never do that. But they're a little bit more general. And so it kind of gives you ideas about how you can think a little bit bigger and more broadly, or just sort of a template about ideas that others have used to be able to make changes in their lives. Sometimes, surprisingly, one of the difficulties people can have in making changes in their lives is that their friends and their family can sometimes hold them back. And sometimes it's for very good reason. For example, you sometimes see people on the talent shows and be like, don't have any talent. And you can see that their friends have been telling them they're just great, and that's just not right. but sometimes it's because your friends may not want you to leave them. And, there are other reasons. So good techniques are to just dabble, which you can do in online learning. Just go and try some of these new things. See what interests you or what seems to click. And that, or you can go covert and like do the learning but not tell anybody what you're doing so they don't try to talk you out of it. Or you can just be a contrarian and just say, you know, I'm going to do this, I don't care what, and then head right off and do it. But all three techniques have their pluses and minuses.
Well, Barbara, you compiled all these examples from across the world to put into your book, Mind Shift. And I'm curious, I'm sure that, you know, each one you selected to make a certain point and that they create an overall picture when you put all the pieces together. But is there one or two that were absolute favorites and standouts, or do you love them all equally?
Oh, you know, they're all terrific. And I can tell just a few that give some intriguing insights, I think, that are helpful for anyone. So there was a fellow in Singapore who was a terrible student. He actually got kicked out of elementary school for fighting. He was bottom of his class, just terrible. And Singapore is very, very competitive. And his parents were at their wits' end. They just didn't know what to do with him. And he happened to go to this one sort of open your eyes to your potential camps that were popular back in that would have been the 80s. And lo and behold, it opened his eyes. They taught him memory tricks. So sort of associating imagery with things you want to remember so he could remember long lists and so forth, and how to study a little bit so that it clicked better for him. My sense is he has some attentional difficulties, and learning some of these, just a few tricks of learning, really helped him to start getting better at studies. And so because he was doing better, that made him feel better, and he kept doing more of it, and he went from bottom of his class to actually getting into and getting a degree from the National University of Singapore, which is one of the world's leading universities. And he became Singapore's youngest millionaire, and he trains other people. His company is one of the largest training groups. And what an incredible turnaround. And it came because he learned a few tricks that helped him to learn better. And I think that's the kind of thing that everybody can do. And even for me, for example, when I was learning a new, you know, I learned a language, I learned Russian, and then later I began to realize that some of the tricks I had kind of figured out to help me learn Russian also seemed to help when I applied them to learning in math and science. And so these kinds of approaches where you know a little bit about the learning process itself can be enormously helpful.
Barbara, I want to ask you, I don't want to divert you from telling your other stories. We'll get right back to that, but I have to ask you about Russian. Why were you drawn to learning Russian? It's kind of a, it's a personal thing for me because my son did exactly the same thing, and I always wondered what it was that, what it is that draws people to learn that particular language. It seems kind of odd.
Well, the thing is, at the time, it was really pretty random. I wanted to have a language that was fairly different than English. At the same time, I was afraid of an Asian language like Chinese, Japanese, Korean, because I thought, gosh, that's so different from English that I may never be able to really be totally fluent in it. But Russian is really quite different. At the same time, it's not so different. And so I just thought, that's kind of a mid to hard language that I can still master in maybe a year and a half or so. And so it was more randomness than deciding that, oh, I just love Russian and I've got to take it and so forth. And I think I'd taken a couple months of Russian in high school. It was a class they just had at my high school. And so I already knew the Cyrillic alphabet. And so I think between all those factors, you know, it was really quite random. But of course, once you start learning a language, then you start learning the culture and you see all sorts of, you know, things that you admire about that culture.
So interesting. So before we let you go, I just thought I had to ask, you know, I look at Christiane Amanpour, the journalist, and I think, well, she must have been, she's a born journalist. She is so wonderful to listen to and to watch, but she didn't start off that way. I didn't know that. Tell us about Christiane.
Well, she worked as an assistant a technical assistant in an office. It was a radio newscast office. It was a television newscast office. And she wasn't at all some kind of budding newscaster star at the very beginning. I mean, she was just kind of one of many people. And it's similar for General Jackson in the U.S. Army during the Civil War. He became one of the Civil War's greatest heroes of the North, and yet he had been drummed out of the service previously for alcoholism or drinking too much, and he was just kind of a sort of a ne'er-do-well. He couldn't really make enough money to make ends meet. There's sometimes I play a trick on myself. I'll just look around me and I'll just think how many incredible people like Christiane Amanpour and, General Jackson Ulysses S. Grant, that was the general. How many of them are around me? When I'm looking on the street, the sort of the heroes that are just not having an occasion for whatever reason to rise to becoming a hero. It's all, I think there's a lot of heroes among us and admirable people, and they just, the opportunity hasn't arisen that they have felt the need to come forward. But we have many of those kind of individuals amongst us.
Well, your book is just packed with these kind of inspirational stories. And I think that's where the learning comes, is reading about what others have done. It really gives you confidence that you too could have a mind shift and break through the obstacles and discover your hidden potential. So, wonderful book, Dr. Barbara Oakley, also the best-selling author of the book, A Mind for Numbers. We thank you so much for joining us today on The Mountain Life.
Well, thank you, Lynn and Tim. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And I like that. I like what was her term for second skill? I think she called it second skill, developing a second skill. And
you like it because you're good with languages.
Well,
I'm horrible with languages, but my kids.
Well, it doesn't have to be a language.
Well, it's kind of one of those things, though. You know, I mean, for me, I'd go, and I play with the idea from time to time, I'm going to really learn something that's difficult for me, which is a language. And boy, did I hate it when I was taking Spanish in high school and college.
Well, according to what Barbara Oakley is talking about, is that what we ought to do, is try something that we sort of already know we're not good at? How about the thing that we've always wanted to do and that we're curious about?
Well, that was sort of the original, you know, theme I was asking about, you know, what motivates. And in some cases, she said it's individual for everybody. But, you know, for her, there was kind of that, what am I not good at? I'm going to go do that, because she had this story. You know, it's that story thing. We have a narrative about ourselves and we've really bought into it. So what do we do to change that narrative? For me, I have a narrative that I'm really horrible with languages. Yet I'm drawn to languages. I am so impressed with people who are multilingual. I mean, it's just incredible.
Interesting. Well, maybe
I know,
you
right?
need to immerse yourself. I was going to ask you if when you get in a Spanish-speaking country...
I can do a little bit.
You can do a little bit.
Yeah, I can. I mean, a little bit comes back to me, but I've spent a fair amount of time in Spanish-speaking countries, and I am certainly not where you would think I might be.
Well, many people say that. For some reason, learning a foreign language seems to be a very elusive thing for some people. I love it. But that said, I took a semester of Russian in graduate school, and I would say that I have an affinity for learning foreign language, but I didn't remember anything really from Russian. I like the Romance languages.
Yeah.
They're fun and easy and they sound great.
Right. But any language to me is, I have this narrative that it's really difficult, and I bet I could change that.
You seem to have mastered the English language.
Some would argue differently.
All right. Well, that was really great. Again, the book was Mind Shift, to break through obstacles to learning and discover your hidden potential. And I just wanted to say, if I ever get up on stage to sing, you need to be one of my friends who stops me, because it will be bad.
Because the narrative is actually accurate?
Yeah. I will never be a good singer. I have those dreams that I'm like on stage in front of thousands of people. And
with
I'm
Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, with Bruce Springsteen.
You're his backup singer.
Right. And we are belting it out and it's all great. But I just know that will never be a reality. Oh, good stuff. Okay, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment, speaking with two local adventure guides. We love these gals. They bring a lot of adventure to the town, and now they're bringing it to the younger set, a new demographic. When we return, it's The Mountain Life. Stay with us.
Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Hospital, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, the Promontory Foundation, and All Seasons Resort Lodging.
Miller Orthodontics is a proud supporter of The Randy Barton Show. Since 1988, my wife and I have provided a combined 45 years of orthodontic care. For our Invisalign patients, we provide digital scanning and imaging technology that eliminates the need for wet molds of your teeth. More information is at m2ortho.com.
Thank you.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Well, our guests today, Tina Nardi and Alicia Nicewander. Tina is from Elevated Adventure Company, Alicia of Mountain Vista Touring. These gals embark on many adventures on a regular basis, and they do it for a living. They typically show adults how to ramp up their sense of exploration and pursuit of adventure, but now they plan to target a new demographic, girls from the age of 14 to 17, and they have a new camp coming up in June. It's called Empowerment. Did I say that right, or was that completely goofy? Pretty goofy. But Empowerment Camp.
Say it in Russian.
No thanks. June 21st through 23rd. They're joining us to talk about what these budding empowered adventurers can expect and how to sign up. Alicia and Tina, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great to have you. So both of you, I know you do lots of leading adults on adventures, but you both have had a lot of exposure to teenagers, especially. Tina, you were a longtime coach for the Park City Ski Team. That I know. Alicia, you've been running the local portion of the Kids Adventure Games mm-hmm. for a while now. Yep. So what, Tina, let's start with you. What about, you know, this age in particular, 14 to 17, and girls? Why did you want to organize a camp for them?
So as you know, I worked with the U16 age group with the Park City Ski Team and then Snowbird and for years. And I love this age group. I think they're so fun to work with. I think that they're at an age that they're trying to figure out who they are. They've really figured out a lot of who they would like to be potentially. And they are really looking for someone to have a positive influence. Like, I think they totally attach to that. And what is a better age group before even like pre-college, right? To kind of build confidence, to be stoked, to maybe find an activity or an area that is new to them. That'd be fun.
Is there a gender component? I hear you speaking about a gender component, and how big is that?
Well, I mean, I think that I've kind of naturally gravitated towards working with girls. I think I have had a lot of really positive female role models in my life. And I think that looking back on my coaching career, I know that I've had a really positive influence on both genders, but especially with girls, for sure. I think that that everyone needs that, and especially kind of in this community in general, I think that it's we could use some super positive female role models.
Yeah. I think I would say that for parents, these ages, you know, especially around 14, 15, they're really difficult years. And we see our kids struggling so much for finding their identity and finding their path and having confidence and not being overly, especially for girls, not being overly influenced by their peers in a bad way if they're not accepted, for example. You know, I don't have girls, but I heard forever about, you know, the mean girl group that wouldn't let them be. And it's just fascinating to me and so sad that they have to go through that. And I don't know, Alicia, what do you think? I mean, you're younger and you're, I mean, that's
Thank
part
you.
Of it.
Wow.
Yeah, you're younger. Young. It's all relative,
yeah.
Right?
Well, but I think finish your question.
No, that's it. It's
well,
just,
for me, that age was very difficult because I was kind of raised in a very structured setting, which didn't work for me and doesn't really work for me still. So I think I struggled a lot when I was in high school and even junior high, just sort of finding my way and figuring out who I was, which is not uncommon, but I looked to some negative sources to try to figure that out. And that didn't work either. And shortly afterward, when I entered college, I really found nature and I found my place in sort of these outdoor adventure recreational settings and environments. And that became my therapy. And that's where I sort of figured out who I was as an individual. And that's why I am so passionate about what I do for a living. I get to share that experience with others. And I just think it's such a key role in the development of us as a human species. And the earlier we can tap into that, I think the better. And so when we can get these girls at that really in those formidable years, I think that's really important. And I think it can be very influential.
What do you see with the people that you take out in your various adventures? Because you're both doing similar things. And as Lynn pointed out, you know, it's mainly adults that you take out. But now you're focusing on the camp with the kids, which is phenomenal. But there must be a common element to that, you know, kids engaging in something that you connected with and feel is important. But when you take your clients out, what do you see happen? Are they adventure enthusiasts and they have to kind of have that to be drawn to what you're offering? Or are they kind of just like, hey, this looked interesting online and here I am. I'm a complete, you know, city dweller, urbanite and, you know, open my eyes. And does it, what happens? Do you see a transformation?
I would say for me and my demographic of people is a little bit different than Tina's, and my adventures are more half day where hers can be multi-day. But for a lot of my clients, a lot of them are pretty affluent, and maybe they haven't had the time or the opportunity to sort of experience different things out in nature, or maybe they haven't had the confidence. And one thing that I do is mine is more of a boutique setting where it's all privately guided. So I'll take out one person if that's what it is. And to really cater the experience to that person and give them confidence on whatever level they are performing, whether it's super beginner or whether they've just come off of Kilimanjaro, which I've had those clients too. You know, you can really cater to that. And when you get people comfortable in nature, the walls come down, and then the things I've heard out there, I could write a book. I mean, and I could blackmail a lot of people because you just kind of become somebody's counselor out there because all of a sudden they're in a comfortable environment and nature has a very healing component. And that's one reason that I love it. So I've seen a lot of really positive shifts in people, even just over the course of a couple hours where, you know, they didn't think that they could go stand up paddleboarding. And all of a sudden after half an hour, they're standing and paddling and they're just almost falling off the board out of just sheer shock that they're standing on it. So that's one thing that keeps me going and keeps me moving in that direction. And again, that's why I want to share it with as many people as possible.
And yours is locally based.
Yes, mine is local.
Right in
whereas
Park City.
Tina
so
does
you're sharing
somewhere.
Park City and
yes.
the surrounding region like
yep.
Mount Timpanogos and
yep.
that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm,
the
exactly.
Uintas. And then yep. Tina, what is there a common components of what Alicia deals with?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of similarities in what we do. I mean, we go down to the desert and just hit different parts of Utah. But one word that is so huge with Elevated Venture Company is connect. We want to be able to get outdoors and connect with yourself, connect with the people that you're with, connect with the outdoors. And so our experiences are kind of totally focused around that. And how can we get you maybe away from the phone, away from the computer, away from the stress of other things, and really quiet. We like to take to areas that are a little bit more off the beaten path for that exact reason. You know, you feel like you're truly out there. And with that, you know, you get that connection with yourself in a different way. And it's really cool. We find a lot of people are like, holy cow, like, the outdoors is amazing. Utah is amazing. But just in general, this experience, like, how can I bring this into my everyday life?
You know, I want to ask both of you, well, I want to ask you about this connection component because I framed it recently in terms of the energetic body. You know, we as human beings have an energetic body. We have a physical body, an intellectual body, a spiritual body, an energetic body. And the earth has an energetic body. And this connection that you talk about with nature, isn't that connecting those energetic bodies? And once you do that, there's a grounding that occurs and allows for these other things that you're speaking to?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like, I mean, the desert to me is such a special place, and I know it is to a lot of other people because it's just, you feel a vibration. It's a completely different vibration. And I think a lot of people coming from the city, that's a completely different vibration. And when you go down there and it is quieter and you have this different energy about it because there's a different buzz, there's maybe less people, there's this time, this space to really kind of tap into that, to ground down. And I absolutely believe that. And we're going to be doing some yoga down there as well with the girls, which is fun. It's going to be very beginner level, but that in its own right, I mean, just the breath, the movement, and really like taking your socks off, taking your shoes off, and like putting your hands into the dirt and being there for a little while. Like, that's a huge part of grounding too.
Self-limiting thoughts and behaviors. It seems as though in any given group of adults, when you're out doing something that tests your limits physically, that's when you see a lot of those self-limiting thoughts and behaviors and fear come up. And I'm wondering about, as you take it to the younger set, do you feel like you can sort of head that off at the pass, like nip it in the bud before it really gains full steam? I mean, for sure, girls ages 14 to 17 are going to be forming lots of limiting behaviors and things like that. But what a gift for them that you can, you know, you can stop it and you can show them what they can do. I mean, what do you see about firmly implanted behaviors like that in kids versus adults? Like, kids just don't have it as much.
Right.
You know?
I mean, that's something that I still struggle with. I struggled with it then. I struggle with it now on a different level. I think it's something that will always be kind of eating at the back of my mind, you know, but it's realizing and telling yourself and creating a new truth that you are enough. And the place that you are today is the place that you need to be in order to progress to tomorrow. So I think having a lot of those thoughts and really sort of things that can create a negative path for you, having a lot of those in my past, but shifting and learning how to shift that thought into something positive is a great example that I can hopefully protrude onto these kids as they're growing up and realize, like, this is normal to think these limiting thoughts about yourself, but it doesn't have to stick and it doesn't have to be your truth. Like, you let the thought come in and you let it go out. And then you create, you take that space where the thought was and you put something positive where now you're focusing on that. Yeah. And that's where, again, in nature, you know, when I go for a long run, the first couple miles, I'm just like, what are you doing? You're not a runner. This is so hard. This is so taxing. But after, I mean, and it takes me a little while, but after several miles down the trail, I'm like, you got this. You're awesome. You're strong. You're powerful. And just feeling that shift is such an amazing thing. And if we can get these kids to realize what that takes or where their shift happens, I think can really eliminate a lot of potential problems in their near future and as they're really learning to grow up and figure out who they are.
That's so great. You know, back to that 90%, 99% or whatever it is just showing up.
Yeah.
That is so true, you know?
It is.
Just come to the camp.
Mm-hmm.
Just show up. And before you know it, like you, just showing up as not a runner and you show up on a run.
Yeah.
I mean, so often, isn't it that just getting out there?
Yeah.
And then you've got it.
And be open.
Well,
show
and I think,
and
too, I mean, we can speak from experience, right? And actually, you know, early we were like, oh, man, what have you been up to? And, like, how was this past trip? And it's one of those that we come from experience. We have the background. We've had those negative thoughts. And, man, on some of these last trips, it's like I've created mantras for myself to, like, keep in a positive mindset because I, too, go to those negative thoughts.
Yeah.
And so it's like, what can we actually bring to these girls from our experiences to maybe give them tools for the future to have these awesome experiences and to push their limits and to have confidence to do that?
Yeah. So let's talk about the particulars of the camp. So it's just one camp, mm-hmm. June 21st through 23rd. Mm-hmm. So what's the schedule looking like? You're going to keep the girls overnight. How does it look, yeah. Alicia?
Well, it's over the solstice, which we're kind of excited about because that's always just such a cool, it's my favorite day of the year and also the saddest day of the year for me.
I am
I'm
so
like,
with you.
Oh, it's the longest day, but that means tomorrow's going to be shorter. But we're going to focus on the positive. It's going to be the longest day, and we're going to be down south around Goblin Valley area. So like Tina said, we're going to be doing some yoga and we're going to explore around Goblin Valley because that's such a fun area where you can just sort of a free-for-all, like one of the only places you can just cruise around and climb on stuff and whatnot. And we'll be camping kind of in that area on some BLM property. And you know, it's going to be set up as sort of a team environment where everyone's going to pitch in. Tina and I are not going to set up everyone's camp and cook all the meals and clean everything. Everyone's going to have a role and a job, and we're going to sort of divide into smaller subgroups where people are with maybe someone that they don't know very well, and just they have to learn how to work together and communicate through different tasks and duties around camp. We're going to do some hiking through Little Wild Horse Canyon, possibly Bell's Canyon, and have campfires at night where we try to facilitate in a non-conforming situation, but just try to facilitate conversations that might open up to something deeper and bigger and just kind of a safe environment. And yeah, all the meals and the food and transportation and permits and all that kind of stuff is going to be provided in the cost. It's just the camping gear that's not provided, which we're assuming most people have that. And if not, then we're going to figure out how to arrange that. But that's one thing that they need to bring.
And how many spots do you have available?
So we're open for 15 spots. That's kind of our max, and about 7 is our minimum right now. And it's $449 for per camper. As Lish said, everything is included in that. And we're pretty excited to offer it at this, you know, pretty approachable cost. I think for a camp like this, it's 3 days, it's 2 nights, all transportation, all food, all permits, guides, everything. And we want to be able to bring this to as many people in the community as possible. In the future, we really want to create like a scholarship program too, so that, you know, maybe some of the underprivileged or anyone who might look at this and say this is too much can actually apply, and we can give this, because I think it really should be open, or we think it should be open to as many girls as possible.
Absolutely. That sounds great. Well, and maybe just starting with this interview, we ought to say that the scholarship fund is open for donations.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'll tell you, I have a garage full of camping gear. So if anyone
needs
stuff, I'm willing to loan that out.
Nice. Perfect.
So again, it's June 21st through 23rd. How do you register?
You can send us an email. My email is Tina Nardi, N-A-R-D-I, at elevatedadventurecompany.com, or with Alicia.
You can send mine. Probably the easiest way is info@parkcityhiking.com.
Okay. Excellent. We're suddenly out of time.
Ooh.
So thank you for joining us, Tina Nardi, Alicia Nicewander.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And Elevated Adventure Company and Mountain Vista Touring.
Yes.
And good luck. It sounds like a wonderful
thing.
Thank
you.
Thanks so
much.
I'd like to go. Can I be 14 again? You know, I didn't discover the out of doors really until I was in college. And so what a great opportunity you're doing. And I would be crazy without the out of doors.
Yes.
Without that adventure. Let's thank our underwriters.
They are Destination Hotels Utah, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Park Meadows Country Club, San Francisco Design, Park City Mountain Resort, and Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties.
And we'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, celebrating 25 years in Park City. San Francisco Design is happy to sponsor public affairs programming on KPCW. For 25 years, we have been providing home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. We're located on Bonanza Drive and at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
For adventurers on a budget, the Utah Olympic Park offers a host of activities at no charge. Admission and parking are always free. Start with a tour of the Alfing and Ski Museum and the Eccles 2002 Winter Games Museums. Best of all, come support athletes from all over the world who train at the park. Open daily from 10 to 6. Details at UtahOlympicLegacy.com. Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing sport and recreation opportunities.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with Tim Henney. Have just a few seconds to talk about the March for Science coming up this Saturday again, beginning at the Brew Pub on the top of Main Street at 9:30, coming down Main Street through the Bear Bench Plaza, back up to Sweet Alley, or back up Sweet Alley to the Bear, to the Brew Pub Plaza. There will be speeches there, lots of incredible scientists. I was trying to compile the list, but we've run out of time. But, you know, we have some incredible academic institutions in this state and wonderful speakers coming out of that. So after the Brew Pub Plaza, heading down to the Jim Santee Auditorium for more speeches and a big event on Saturday. You've been listening to KPCW Park City, and it's time now for National Public Radio News from Washington. Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life.